Emeritus Sokachev will tell us about hidden symmetry of correlation functions in n equals 4 super young fields.
So, first of all, let me thank the organizers for inviting me to this conference. So my talk goes a little bit away from the mainstream of the conference, I would say. But I will make contact with integrability in at least two aspects. One of them is a recent calculation of the Kunishian normal dimension at 5 loops and possibly also at 6 loops, which served as experimental evidence for certain integrable models. And the other one is this revealed symmetry structure, which I want to explain here, which hopefully will lead to some new notion of integrability. So this work is, work was done with a number of collaborators, but the most important one, most relevant for that work, shown here. Well, I will mostly talk about the so-called stress tensor multiplet in n equals 4 young Mills. I will start by a brief just introduction or recalling some basic properties. And then my main subject will be the correlation functions, 4-point functions in particular of this stress tensor multiplet. I will explain some of their main properties. And then I will try to show you why this object has a well-hidden symmetry, which could have been found many years ago, but we failed to, so we discovered it rather late. And this symmetry allowed us to not compute, but construct the correlation function to currently to 6 loops, with I will explain the idea of the procedure. It's purely graphical. Not Feynman graphs, but just some graph theory. And then I will tell you the idea of how these recent results allowed us to greatly simplify the computation of the anomalous dimension of the Konishi operator to the point that we were able to do it at 5 loops. And I will conclude. So, the stress tensor multiplet. Well, this was one of the, harmonic oscillators of the early ADS-CFT. So for those of you who have been involved in the ADS-CFT correspondence from the early days, they remember that this object was one of the most widely studied. It belongs to the so-called family of half-BPS operators, which are protected from quantum corrections. They have no anomalous dimensions, and which are dual to string states. And in particular, in the beginning, people were studying extensively the correlation functions of such multiplets, both in CFT and in ADS. And here, Sergei Frolov and Gleb Aritunov, who were one of the pioneers of these studies. So, for those of you who do not know, have forgotten, let me just briefly remind you what this operator is. It's a supermultiplet, so it starts with the lowest weight state, which is made of the two scalars, of the 6 scalars of n equals 4 young Mills. It's a bilinear operator, and belongs to the representation 20 prime of SU4. So, if you build the whole supermultiplet by applying n equals 4 supersymmetry, you will discover that among the many, many states of this multiplet, there is, of course, the stress tensor, that hence the name of the multiplet, but most importantly for us here, the Lagrangian of the theory, the Onshell Lagrangian, is a member of this multiplet. So such multiplets are called half-BPS for a reason which I will explain later on this transparency, but they're also called, very often they're called chiral primaries. Well, what I have shown you here is anything but chiral, because the expansion of this supermultiplet in superspace involves both chiral and anti-chiral Grassmann coordinates. So it is not really chiral, but it is restricted in a different way, which makes it depend only on half of the Grassmann variables, hence the name half BPS. How to see this? The most The best way to see this half BPS nature is to use the so-called N equals 4 analytic or harmonic equivalently superspace, which involves auxiliary bosonic variables. The idea is very simple. You break the R symmetry SU4 down to SU2 cross another SU2 cross U1 by introducing these harmonic or auxiliary bosonic variables with an SU2 and SU2 prime index. And you use those to project the Grassmann variables of the original superspace onto two halves. One half is called, say, rho. It's a linear combination, and the other half you leave aside. And similarly, you can do it for the anti-chiral coordinates. Then the statement that this multiplet is half BPS means simply that it depends only on the projected variables rho and their analogs rho bar. But it does not depend on the other halves. And, of course, it should depend on the newly introduced auxiliary variables y. So in terms of these new Grassmann variables, the expansion looks like this. You find, again, the Lagrangian. You find the stress tensor. You find as well all the other currents of the theory, the supersymmetry current, the SU4 current, are some of these numerous components. So the first operator in this expansion is this bosonic operator, which is now projected with the auxiliary variables, and they take the form of null vectors of SO6. I here is an SO6 vector. So this guarantees automatically that they belong to the representation 20 prime, which is a symmetric traceless representation of SO6. For the purposes of this talk and this study, I will not need the anti-chiral sector of the multiplet, although it exists, could be useful for other things. But at the moment, let me just restrict to the chiral sector by simply setting the anti-chiral odd variables to zero. Then the expansion becomes much shorter. I cannot reach the stress tensor anymore, but the expansion terminates with the Lagrangian of the theory, with a maximal power rho to the fourth, because there are only four Grassmann, chiral Grassmann variables in this description. Now, what is interesting is that if you take this multiplet and integrate over the four Grassmann variables and also over the space-time variables, you obtain the so-called on-shell action of the theory. So this may look surprising because the on-shell action is supposed to be supersymmetric, but we have only integrated over one quarter of the original superspace. Usually such superspace integrals are not supersymmetric, but this one is due to some very special properties of the stress tensor multiplet. In addition to being half BPS, it has other properties which I will not discuss here. So this is a way of writing the action of the theory as a quarter superspace integral of the stress tensor multiplet. Now, the correlation functions. As I said, they have been extensively studied in ADS-CFT. People were trying to find some common features on the ADS side and on the CFT side and compare them to get some evidence for the correspondence. So let me first tell you something about the most general endpoint function of such stress tensor multiplets. It has a double expansion. One in the coupling constant, this is the Toft coupling constant, in the powers of the coupling, and the other in the Grassmann variables rho. Remember, we are now chiral. We suppress the anti-chiral dependence. So each term in this expansion has three indices. N is the number of points, L is the loop order, and K is a Grassmann degree. So each of these terms, K runs from 0 to N minus 4, each of them is homogeneous in the odd variable of degree 4k. This is for SU4 reasons why the expansion goes in 4k, powers 4k. And of particular interest is the case n equals 4, which is the minimal allowed number here, as you can see. In this case, k is 0, and there is no Grassmann dependence at all in the chiral sector. So this is a purely bosonic correlation function for n equals 4, which is the correlation function of four scalar operators, the so-called chiral primaries, what people usually call them. And this has only an expansion in the coupling, perturbative expansion, starting with tree or Born level. I have shown you here the Born level correlator, four-point correlator. It is made of propagators with the standard X dependence and some Y dependence. The Y dependence just takes care of the SU4, the various SU4 representations which are present in this object. But then you go to loop corrections, and our main subject here will be the loop corrections. Let me just mention without any details that we have recently discovered one rather surprising duality between these various types of components of the correlation function. If you divide by the tree level and then take the limit in which the neighboring points become light-like separated, or they form a light-like polygon, so this object turns out to be dual to the super amplitudes of all kinds, n to the power k MHV amplitudes, which can be collected in a super amplitude divided by the MHV tree, and all of this squared. This duality also works with Wilson loops, so it's in fact a triality relation. This will be important at some stages of our analysis, although it's not absolutely essential here. So now we want loop corrections to this correlation function, to the four-point function. It is a standard procedure in field theory to generate loop corrections by just differentiating with respect to the coupling. And this, if you look at the path integral which defines the correlation function, amounts to inserting the Lagrangian, or rather the action of the theory, as an extra point. So you insert an extra point in the correlator with the Lagrangian in it, and you integrate over. This gives you the first loop correction. By iterating the procedure many times, you can obtain the L loop correction by inserting L of these Lagrangians. So you create L additional points, and you have now a new correlation function with 4 plus L points, which should be computed at the lowest level, Born level. Lowest level does not mean it's independent of the coupling. It is of proportional to the a to the power L, which in fact explains this offset here. If you have noticed, the loop expansion does not start at the zeroth power of the coupling. It starts with an offset depending on the Grassmann degree of the object. And so what is most important here is that each of the Lagrangian points comes together with the power of the Grassmann variable at the corresponding point. You have the rho 5 to the 4th and so on. So this, in fact, is what we need to generate loop corrections, is this Born level correlator, but it is also a component of the super object which I have shown here. Precisely this component, where the Grassmann degree is equal to the loop order. And we have set the first four Grassmann variables to zero, because we are only interested in the bosonic operators at the first four points. These are the external points. All the other points are integration points, so they will give us loop corrections to this four-point function. So this is the basic object we need to calculate the loop corrections. This is a Born-level correlator for chiral primaries, if you want to call them so, and L Lagrangians. This has to be computed, of course. It's not a simple object, but the nice property of it, it's a rational function. There are no integrals in this. The integrals come later. You integrate over all the insertion points. But so far, this is just a rational function. Sophisticated, but rational function, with nice conformal properties. But we can do even better, because we remember that this operator O was the lowest component in the expansion of the stress tensor multiplet, whereas the Lagrangian was the top component in the truncated chiral sector of the stress tensor multiplet. So we can say that what is written here is in fact a particular component of the 4 plus L point function of stress tensor multiplets, in which the first four Grassmann variables have been set to zero, and the last L of them, you pick the top component. So this is the kind of object that we study. So if we now plug this back into the loop correction formula, we can write down the most general L loop correction to the four-point function as a multiple integral, L-fold integral, over the space-time positions of the Lagrangians, and then also over the Grassmann variables, which pick the top components of each of these T's. So the loop corrections to the four-point functions are given by the integral of the 4 plus L-point function calculated at Born level. So far, so good, but do we know something useful about this much bigger object? Now I am going to show you that we indeed know quite a lot about it. First of all, let me show you two examples, the simplest examples, where you can see many of the features. So this is the one loop correction is given by a 5-point function of Grassmann level 1 means 4, in fact. And the two-loop correction is given by a 6-point function of Grassmann level 8. And they have the following very simple form. There is some color factor. Then there is a typical denominator which is made of the product of all distances between all points. You can see here. And then some numerator. The numerator will be the most important object which we will study and will discover some of its properties. But also there is something else here which is very important. This I5, I6, and so on, is a component of a so-called nilpotent endpoint, n is this index here, superconformal invariant. Nilpotent means it's proportional to Grassmann variables, so it has a Grassmann degree 4 times n minus 4. Well, this invariant can be constructed just using conformal supersymmetry, and I don't explain it here. But for our purposes, we only need one component of that, obtained by taking the first four Grassmann variables, setting them to zero. Then because it's of Grassmann degree, maximal Grassmann degree, then you automatically have to pick the remaining n minus 4 Grassmann variables to the maximal degree. And it has this form with some universal factor and also another universal four-point polynomial. So it depends on the first four points, on both the spacetime and the auxiliary variables, and it has this very simple form. So this is universal irrespectively of the loop order, which means this number of points here. There is always this prefactor in front. As I said, this object can be constructed using the fermionic generators of the superconformal group. I will not show, it's a very simple formula, but I will not show it here. Most important for us is that this object has a fixed conformal and SU4 weights at each point, at the first four points matching the properties of the O20 operator, at the other points matching the properties of the Lagrangian. And in addition, and that's most important for us, this object, by construction, is fully permutation invariant. So it's an endpoint invariant where all the endpoints are on the same footing. It's permutation invariant. So let me summarize this slide here. We know that the integrand of the L loop correction of the 4-point function is a rational function which has this universal structure. It has this invariant of that type, whose component I have shown you here. And then it is defined up to some function of the space-time variables only, for which you see examples here. This function, I'll call it FL, it depends on all the points, external and integration points. By construction, and due to this property here, because this was a component in the correlator of 4 plus L identical stress tensor multiplets, and because this invariant here has full permutation symmetry, we deduce that the so far undetermined function of space-time variables must have a full permutation symmetry with respect to all points, no matter whether they are the first 4 points in our 4-point function or they refer to Lagrangian points. This function has full permutation symmetry. In addition, it has well-defined conformal properties, namely conformal weight 4 at each point, which puts a very strong restrictions on the possible functions you can put in this place. And I'm going to show you now how these properties can be used to predict or construct this function very efficiently. So, once again, the loop correction of lth order to the four-point function is given by this universal prefactor times of loop integral. The loop integral has this form. There is a universal factor in front, and then an L-fold integral of some rational function. The rational function has a universal denominator, which is the product of all distances. This is obviously permutation symmetric. And the numerator. And the numerator should itself be permutation invariant. It's a function of all points, the four external points and the L integration points with full permutation symmetry. The presence of this denominator here is in fact dictated by the OPE properties of this Born level 4 plus L point correlation function. So that explains why you cannot have more than squares of distances in this denominator. Otherwise, you will not have the right singularities for the OPE. So, we need effectively in this formula, the only thing we need to determine is this numerator, which is, as I said, permutation symmetric and also homogeneous in the distances of conformal weight L minus 1 at each point. Just to give you an example which I already showed you, at one and two loops for these functions, the numerator is at one loop simply a constant, at two loops a very simple homogeneous polynomial. Just to mention here, the fact that the loop corrections, you can see that the loop correction function does not depend on the SU4 variables. The only dependence of the SU4 variables is in this universal polynomial here. This is called the so-called partial non-renormalization, which means that all SU4 channels in this correlation function get one unique loop correction function. So now, how do we construct such polynomials? It's very easy at low loop levels. You can do it just on a piece of paper very quickly. To mention before that we attempted many times to compute the three-loop correlator by Feynman graphs, and it's so complicated that we failed years ago and gave up. But now this calculation becomes, effectively it's summarized on this page here, and you can do it yourself on a piece of paper. So well, it's purely a graph theoretic problem to construct the permutation invariant numerators of a given conformal weight. Conformal weight means that from each point, there is a number of lines in the numerator. The number of lines equals the conformal weight, and the conformal weight was the loop order minus one. So here is, for instance, what happens at three loops. Three loops means four external points plus three integration points, altogether seven points. We need a numerator with two lines going out of each point. This corresponds to the conformal weight. How many possibilities are there to connect seven points by two lines sticking out of each point? You quickly find out that there are four classes of graphs, connected and some disconnected graphs, plus permutations. But this was just the numerator in my integrand. This is the integrand of the L-loop correction. I show you the graphs for the numerators. The integrand itself is obtained by dividing by the product of all distances between all points, which means that some of the numerator lines will be deleted by denominator lines, and what remains in the end gives you a graphical representation for this function f here, with solid lines corresponding to inverse powers of distances. Occasionally, you will see that some numerator lines survive here, because in particular, say, in this case, you see that there are too many lines going out of one, too many black lines going out of one point. So you have to balance the conformal weights. So these four types of numerators correspond to four types of integrand graphs at three loops. But if you look carefully at the four topologies, you will realize that among them only one is planar. This one is planar, the others are non-planar. And, we can do our construction for non-planar integrals as well, but it's most efficient in the planar case. So let us restrict to the planar case. In the planar case, we have this unique topology which we constructed on the previous transparency. But now this is not yet the final form of the integrand. So far here, all the 7 points are on the same footing, and there is a full permutation symmetry. You have to symmetrize over the 7 points. But now we have to choose the 4 external points, which are white dots here, and the remaining 3 integration points, the black dots. And this can be done in several ways. Here we have shown the all possible choices of external versus internal points. And that's not all. There is an extra factor which was present here in this formula. This factor depends only on the external point. So you see that here and here I made 2 steps which break the permutation symmetry. I chose which points to call external and which internal. So the final integrand of the 3-point correlation function is this, where the permutation symmetry is now lost. And that's why by just doing final graph calculations or so on, you may never notice this permutation symmetry. It's well hidden. But if you go through the analysis I've shown you here, you discover that the integrand rewritten in a particular form, in the form of such a graph, all of a sudden becomes totally permutation symmetric. So now we have to break this down to 4.3 loop integrals. And there are 2 classes. This single topology, according to the 5 different choices, breaks down to 5 different 4.3 loop integrals. There are 2 kinds of them. There is one kind which, if you go on shell, which means neighboring points light-like separated, these survive, so they become integrals of the amplitude according to this duality which I mentioned here. Duality between correlators and amplitudes. So such integrals are observed in the amplitude, the so-called tennis court and ladder integral, and also products of lower loop ladders. And there are 2 new integrals which vanish in the light cone limit. Therefore, they are not seen in the foreground amplitude. They are shown here. They don't seem very complicated compared to this, but if you try to compute them by standard means like Mellin-Barnes and so on, you discover that they are really they're difficult. So we don't know yet what these integrals are, and I believe this is one important challenge to find out what kind of functions. These are conformal integrals, therefore they are functions of just 2 cross-ratio variables. Functions of 2 variables, probably involving polylogs of some kind. It's very important to know what they are, because these we know. They are very simple, but these we don't. If we know the full set of integrals, we can predict the spectrum of anomalous dimensions of all twist 2 operators, which is known to be integrable. So this integrability is encoded somehow in the properties of these 2 integrals. But we don't know exactly what they mean. Well, let me go back to the general construction. I showed you the 3-loop case in which there was only 1 topology. But if we go to higher loops, there will be several topologies. And we have to draw all possible graphs and then make a linear combination of the corresponding numerator graphs with so far arbitrary coefficients. These are numerical coefficients which cannot be fixed by symmetry properties. But there is another very simple way, very simple argument, purely algebraic, which allows us to fix all these coefficients. So, once again, the L-loop integrand of the 4-point function has this form, the universal denominator, some permutation invariant numerator according to this graphical construction that I described, and so far unknown numerical coefficients. How to fix them? Because if we don't know these coefficients, this means we don't know the correlation function. It turns out it's very easy to fix them by imposing a kind of a physical requirement on this correlation function. The correlation function, if you keep all points, the external points, the first 4 points, in arbitrary positions, is well defined, it's convergent, no regularization, it's conformal, and so on. But let us create a singularity in it by going, for instance, to the light cone limit, where the neighboring points external points. This I and I plus one refer to the external, four external points only. They become light-like separated, or in terms of cross ratios, this means that the cross ratios go to zero. Then it is natural to expect that the integral, remember we have to integrate over L of these points, the integral will start diverging, and these are logarithmic divergences. And from some general properties of the OPE and so on, you can deduce that the log of the correlation function, which is given here, has a lower divergence, a softer divergence. Roughly speaking, it diverges as a log to the power L instead of the generic divergence of an L-loop integral will have a log to the power 2L logarithmic divergence, generically. But if you have constructed the correct correlation function, and if you take its log, then general OPE arguments tell you that the logarithmic singularities should be softened, roughly speaking, divided by 2. Well, how to arrange this? It's clear that this will not happen with arbitrary coefficients here. We have to carefully choose the coefficients if we want to observe this singularity softening mechanism. Just to show you a simple example. At one loop, there was nothing much because I had only, remember, at one loop, there was only one term in the numerator. But at two loops, there are several terms here, there is still one term, but I don't know the overall coefficient. What should I put in front here? We can say adopt the normalization that the one loop integral is normalized at unity, but then the two loop one we have to find the correct coefficient, and here is the way to find it. Here is the two loop integral is given by the proper two loop and one loop squared if I compute the log of the correlation function. There will be a mixture of perturbative levels. This is given by the expansion of the log. Then, let me put here all the integrants I know. The ones at one loop squared, they are normalized at unity. The ones at two loop so far have an arbitrary normalization, C2. So I get a two-loop integral with this standard denominator and some long numerator. The numerator is a polynomial. So let us think now where from come the logarithmic divergences which are described here in such an integral, and how can we soften them? Well, they come obviously from the following regions when the integration variables x5 or x6 approach an edge which we have made light-like now. So, for instance, the edge x1, x2 is light-like, and if one integration variable approaches this edge, that will create a logarithmic divergence, unless it is suppressed by something. And in order to suppress it, we may try to arrange for the numerator to have zeros in this regime. So this is the asymptotic regime to study. If you require that the numerator, which is shown here, vanishes in this regime, you can fix the constant C2, and it's fixed to B1. This is the idea. Now, you may say this is too simple, just two loops. Will it work at higher loops? Quite surprisingly, it works to all loop orders that we have checked, and we have checked up to six loops. And so all the coefficients, and there are many, well, at six loops there are something like 26, I believe, coefficients to fix. All of them are fixed by this simple, unique requirement. In such regimes, the numerator should have zeros. This fixes unambiguously all coefficients. We don't know why. We don't have an understanding. But this criterion was inspired by a similar work by Spradlin et al., which analyzed the on-shell situation of the four-point amplitude. They were able to go to seven loops, and they also found that a similar criterion fixes all unknown coefficients, and they have thousands of them. So it's a very interesting phenomenon which deserves further study. But experimentally, we know that at least up to six loops, all of these coefficients can be fixed unambiguously. So we know the answer without doing not a single Feynman graph calculation. We know the exact answer. Well, very quickly, let me just flash here the four-loop case. It's similar, just the number of points is bigger now, so you have to draw graphs, or they're called multigraphs because some of them are disconnected. in which now from each point there are three lines going out. There are more possibilities, even in the planar. What I have shown you here are the graphs corresponding to planar integrals. There are a few more, I think 10 more, which correspond to non-planar configurations. I have not shown them here. So these are the numerator graphs. Once you have done this, you can still do this by hand. It's sufficiently simple, as you can see. Then you construct the integrand graph by dividing by the denominators and deleting most of these numerator lines. And you find three candidate topologies for integrand graphs, which are shown here. They will come with unknown coefficients. And the coefficients will be fixed by the criterion which I explained here, by creating an artificial singularity and then requiring it to be softer. And they come out to be equal to plus or minus one, exactly as in the corresponding four gluon amplitude. In fact, all of these integrals, when reduced to the light cone, become a set of eight dual conformal integrals, which people have found some years ago in the direct calculations of the four-loop amplitude. So here is, once again, we have the answer without having done any Feynman graphs. It's just pure graph theory plus a little bit of algebra to fix these coefficients in the numerator, which can be done by Mathematica very quickly and efficiently. Okay. Then here is a similar thing for five loops. I just show you the list of seven planar graphs. Well, these are the master graphs. Remember that what we still have to do is to choose four external points and the remaining internal points. There are many choices possible. So each of these graphs will give rise to a number of integrals, a big number. But it's a fully systematic procedure, can be done by the machine very efficiently. By the way, already at this level you need the machine even to classify these graphs. There are some very efficient mathematical packages for constructing graphs of a given type or of a given connectedness and planar and so on. All of this can be done with the machine quite efficiently. Once again, all the coefficients here are fixed by the log singularity criterion. Just to show you the case of six loops, there are two types of graphs, some are called Runge rule, never mind what this means, it's not important here. So there are 23 graphs. Well, Runge rule effectively means they can be obtained from lower loops by some very simple recursion relations, by just adding one pyramid to the five loop graphs. And then there are more of the non-Runge rule types, but most of them don't even contribute. So altogether there are 26 master graphs at six loops which contribute and whose coefficients can be fixed by the singularity criterion once again. So once more, these, if you break them down to four-point integrals, six loops integrals, there will be thousands of them. But this we have as a Mathematica file, so whenever whoever wants to use it, we have the full correlation function given in terms of a number of 4.6 loop integrals, planar, of course. I didn't mention, maybe I should go back and say it, that at four loops we also studied the non-planar case. There are, I think, about 10 more topologies of non-planar. And the singularity criterion this time does not fix all the coefficients. It fixes all but three coefficients which remain arbitrary. The only thing we know is that they are rational. So we cannot fully predict the non-planar correlation function at four loops, but we can significantly reduce the freedom it. At three loops there are no non-planar corrections. No. Okay, so this is the main idea of the construction, and this is how far we have gone. Given enough computer, well, power and motivation, we could go, I'm sure, to seven loops as well, but the question is, do we need this? At this stage, it's not clear whether we need this. Now, six loops is probably relevant, as I will mention now. So I'm coming to the last topic of this talk, which is the practical application of this construction. And the practical application is to compute the Konishi anomalous dimension in a very, very efficient way. We use a very well-known tool, which is the OPE of the half BPS operators. This OPE, I have shown you here the first few terms. There is the identity, there is the Konishi operator, the O20 itself, and then three more SU4 channels. The SU4 structure you can read off from these factors here. Now, the Konishi, as you know, is just the simplest bilinear scalar operator, which is not protected, therefore it has an anomalous dimension, which is denoted by gamma k here. And being of the lowest scaling dimension among all these channels here, it's the most singular part of the OPE, so it's the easiest to pick by creating a singularity. The leading singularity comes from Konishi. So that makes it most easily accessible for direct calculations. The idea of the calculation is just take the log of the correlation function, create the singularity, which means double coincidence limit of in Euclidean sense. Then from general properties of the OPE, you know how this correlation function will behave in this limit. There will be a simple log singularity, U is the cross ratio, with a coefficient which is the Konishi anomalous dimension, plus some other irrelevant terms. So this is an old method which has been used many years ago to obtain, in particular, the two-loop Konishi anomalous dimension was extracted from the four-point function, which had been calculated from Feynman graphs and so on. By knowing the explicit function, you just do this log expansion, you read off the coefficient, and you know what the Konishi anomalous dimension is. But at three loops, we didn't know the function, and we still don't know the function as a function of the cross ratios. So this method could not be applied. But now it can. In fact, we developed a new method which bypasses the evaluation of these multi-loop integrals, which is a difficult problem, and reduces the calculation to a much simpler problem of evaluating propagator type integrals, for which there is a whole technology developed. I just illustrate here the idea, and then I will finish. So the idea is already seen at one loop. So this is our correlation function with the one loop integral in it. We want to create a singularity by taking the double coincidence limit. Now this is Euclidean. And we use the distance between the neighboring points as a cutoff. Then there is a logarithmic singularity, and the coefficient tells you what the one-loop anomalous dimension is. This is one way to regularize the integral, by using a cutoff. But there is a better way for us, which is we identify the points, exactly identify them. Instead, we modify the dimension of the measure, so that the integral will be regularized. Just the dimension. This is not standard dimensional regularization. Notice that the denominator is not modified. Just the dimension of the measure. So now the singularity takes the form of a simple pole, which you can see here. And the residue of this pole is again the Konishi anomalous dimension. So there are two ways to read off the anomalous dimension. By regularizing this integral, creating a singularity and regularizing in two different ways, they're equivalent. But it turns out that this second way is technically very, very efficient, because this was one loop. But if you go to higher loops and then you look at the log of the correlator, it always has a simple pole singularity. No matter how many loops you have, this particular combination of two-loop, one-loop, and so on integrals is such that it always has only a simple pole singularity. And simple poles are easy to extract from a divergent integral. And remember also that now our integral is a two-point integral, because we identified points 1 and 2 and points 3 and 4. So this is a two-point integral, or in momentum notation, it's a propagator-type integral. And for this, there is, as I said, a very, very efficient technology developed over the years by various people, including Volodya Smirnov, who was our collaborators. And we were able to do this, since we know the correlation function is a bunch of integrals, we took this double coincidence limit, reduced it to, for the log of the correlation function, reduced it to a bunch, very big bunch of two-point integrals, gave it to Volodya Smirnov, who had some secret tools, and he can calculate this extremely efficiently. Say five loops took less than 2 days of machine time. And so we were able to obtain the five-loop anomalous dimension of Konishi. which had been predicted a few years ago by several groups, but so far nobody was able to do the Feynman graph calculation. I think this is simply impossible to do the Feynman graph calculation at this loop level in order to confirm. Now it is fully confirmed, and there is now a challenge to go to six loops and see what happens there. So let me conclude. What I have shown you here is just very basic properties of the stress tensor multiplet. It is really a shame that these properties were known, say, 10 years ago in the early ADS-CFT days. So we, in particular, I was involved, and Burkhardt here was involved in this. We could have noticed all this, but we failed. So anyway, so now better late than never. So then there is a hidden, very symmetric structure in this correlation function, which allows us apparently to find this off-shell integrand at any loop level. Given enough computer power and efficient graph theoretic tools, you can do that to any fixed loop level. But let me remind you that there are two very important ingredients here, without which this would not work, or at least not work as efficiently as it did here. First of all, it was n equals 4 supersymmetry. That's essential because we know, say, for instance, at two loops, the correlation function for a generic n equals 2 conformal theory, which is different from n equals 4, there is no permutation symmetry of the integrand there. So it's a property of n equals 4 only, and I explained it by this superconformal nilpotent invariant, which is only exists in n equals 4. Also, the number of external points is 4. The reason for that is purely symmetries again, namely the nilpotent invariant IN, which I briefly described to you, is unique if the external points if you have 4 external points. If you have more than 4 external points, there are many of these. And then the permutation symmetry, it is still there, but it will rotate different pieces of the integrand, different loop functions into each other. So this permutation symmetry is still there. Well, I wrote here lost. It's not fully lost, but it's less efficient for more than 4 points. We have not really studied this in detail, but we expect it to be less efficient. Now, let me mention again the duality, or rather triality, between correlation functions, amplitudes, and Wilson loops, or even their superversions. Using that relation, we can now predict the integrand, say, of the 4 gluon amplitude to the, for instance, 6 loop levels, and we check that indeed at 6 loops we get exactly the same answer as the parallel construction based on momentum twisters, Grassmannians, and so on, by developed by Akani Hammett and collaborators. So we start from two completely different points of view and approaches. We do some very different constructions, and we find exactly the same, extremely sophisticated answer. We don't know why it works like this. Would be interesting to understand why such two different constructions lead to the same answer. And finally, since this is an integrability conference, this highly predictable structure of this four-point function is somehow related to the integrability of n equals 4 Young-Mills. In particular, the integrals that I showed you, they know all about the spectrum, not only Konishi, but the spectrum of twist two anomalous dimensions. They know about the three-point functions that Pedro was talking about yesterday. So if these objects are integrable, and for them, some of them we know they are, this is encoded into our integrals. They have some special properties which make the spectrum, for instance, integrable. What are these properties is still to be found out. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Emery, for this inspiring talk. And we have time for a couple of questions, because don't forget the conference picture after that. So please, maybe.
So I just wanted to mention that recently with Romuald we calculated the 6 loop anomalous dimension of the Konishi operator. So I was just asking, do you have at least a partial result we could compare?
No. Well, the situation is as follows. I explained to you what we did. So we have 200 megabytes of a mathematical file, of two-point integrals that I showed you. We gave this to Volodya Smirnov and asked him if he could extract a number. Well, so for the moment he has not come up with a number. He needs more incentive. So if we tell him that there is a result already from the integrability, maybe he will find it. It's a non-trivial problem. I did not explain one point here, is that we invented another trick, or rather Volodya invented a trick, which reduces the loop order for the two-point integrals by one. So, for instance, to compute five loops, it was reduced to four loop propagator integrals by some simple trick. And for those, there was an existing technology. So they had a basis of master integrals already available in the literature, which Volodya could use and immediately produce an answer. For the next step, we have to go to five loops to get Konishev six loops. And for that, there is no complete basis of master integrals. This is a non-trivial problem. So these integral experts have to be given incentive to work on this hard problem, but I'm sure they will do it.
So Smirnov is like a black box, and you do not really know what's happening there.
No, he's like a computer. You push a button and then you wait for a couple of days.
It's a bit dangerous, you know, because somehow people doing field theory now are confirming the results obtained by using string theory. It was this four loop, this five loop,
and
now you want also six loop.
The question is, do we really want it? I'm asking you, the audience here, because you know these things better. Do we expect anything new to happen? Apparently, you can tell me if some... Sorry? At eight loops, I know. But eight loops, I'm afraid... we could probably work out the integrals, although this seems hard. Just make a list of integrals. But to compute them, I believe with present technology, this seems impossible. So,
can you stress what is fundamental in your approach, that 100% the basic, and what is assumptions?
There are no assumptions.
Absolutely
none. The only assumption, if you believe in N equals 4 supersymmetry.
For example, this cancellation of singularities.
It's a basic property of an RPE. That if you take the log of the correlation function,
but the number of coefficients is.
That's kind of an assumption. Not an assumption. It's an experimental fact that going to six loops, we could fix. For you, I'm like an experimentalist. So out to six loops, I provide data. So for some of you. Up to six loops, this very simple criterion fixes all the coefficients. For the amplitude people, they went to seven loops. Nobody understands why. Really, that's a topology, I think some topological graph theory problem, which is very interesting in itself. Why this simple property fixes so many coefficients. Now, this believing that it will be like that to eight loops, I think in principle we could do it. In practice, it will be enormous, so 200 gigabytes maybe or more of integrals. Six loops seems to be, we have it in our pocket in the sense of list of integrals. The technology of calculating integrals is about to be developed to this point, so we can have a confirmation given enough incentive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whether do we learn anything from this, I don't know. You will tell me.
Okay. Maybe the last question.
So the key point which you used is this assumption that you shouldn't have singularities when you take null limit x squared 1 to 0.
Yes.
In the log GN. Is it related to this relation or not? To the relation between amplitudes, Wilson loops and correlation?
No, it's a property of the OPE. Just of the Euclidean OPE.
No, you take Minkowski limit. You have null limit.
Euclidean was needed for the computing condition. In fact, that's another good question. We tried, there are two versions of this singularity criterion. Euclidean and Minkowski. We tried both, and Euclidean is less powerful. Already at four loops, it misses one coefficient. Whereas the Minkowski is magically very powerful.
But is that related to the relation to the amplitudes or not?
In a way, yes, because we are in the regime where this correlation function, the log of the correlation function becomes the log of the amplitude. This is, as I said, in fact, this criterion was inspired by the work of Spradlin et al., who did it for amplitudes. So if they understand why it works there, but they don't, we will also understand it.
This is one of the assumptions.
As we said, it's an assumption that will go to any loop order. Yes. But we don't know why it works.
Okay. Then the very last question of Dima.
Yeah. So in the last point here, you would try to speculate about relation to integrability. So do you say that reduction to some particular topologies is like show up of integrability with just a consequence of PC224?
I don't know. The only thing, that's why I believe those three loop integrals that I showed, the new ones which are not known, one should find a way to work them out. And here I believe in the audience there are experts who know in principle how to do it. Once we know what kind of functions these are, maybe this will require some new functions, unknown. Maybe it will be some known functions. Once we know the type of functions, we can look at them and try to understand what makes this correlation function so special that, say, its OPE gives an integrable spectrum. But we need to know the functions. And the three loops is the real test case where we can learn something new. But
so my question was about non-planarity.
Non-planarity.
So you see, you it seems you can efficiently predict topologies for both planar and non-planar case.
Yes.
But integrability is believed to be a planar. Can you feel the difference between the two cases?
In a technological way. As I mentioned, this criterion, the on-shell criterion, does not fix all the coefficients in the non-planar sector already at four loops.
No, but does it mean that before fixing this coefficient, you use only PC24 and not more?
Two?
Does it mean that before fixing these coefficients,
yes,
you use only PC224 algebra, not more than that?
Well, we reduce it to a set of integrals which we don't know how to compute with only, say, three unknown rational coefficients in it. In order to fix those coefficients, we need some data, like, say, Kunishi has been computed in the non-planar sector, two more computations. After that, I don't know, we may believe that the non-planar integrals are special in some way, but already the fact that we cannot fix the correlation function uniquely is apparently telling us that the things are not as much as under control as they are in the planar sector. Mm-hmm. So that's all I can say.
Okay, thank you very much.